भवेत् तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणचक्षुश्रोत्रमथो बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि। सर्वं ब्रह्मोपनिषदं माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्यां मा ब्रह्म निराकरोत्। अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणं मे अस्तु। तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्माः ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम् ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। विल् जस्ट् चेण्ट् द सेकेण्ड् मन्त्र। श्रोत्रस्य श्रोत्रं मनसो मनो यत् वाचोह वाचं स उप्राणस्य प्राणः। चक्षुश्च चक्षुरतिमुच्य धीराः प्रेत्यास्माल्लोका अमृता भवन्ति। So the student approaches the teacher asking, what is it that illumines the sense organs, the organs of action, makes them function? What makes the mind think? And what makes the pranas function? So teacher said it is the eye of the eye, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, and the prana of the prana. So doesn't look like he has told too much, but then he said it, that which the eyes cannot see, but which makes the eyes see, that which the ears cannot hear, but makes the ears hear, and pranas and mind, so on. And that Brahman is what you should know, not what is worshipped. So the student, last week we had seen, he goes and says, he is not in the Upanishad, but the student comes and says, I know it very well. And last week the teacher had said that if you think you know it very well, then your understanding is very limited. Why? Because you know Brahman only as that which enlivens you, all the beings here, and the beings in the entire universe, including the heavens. He says, yeah, well, what's wrong with that? He says, that is limited knowledge of Brahman, because that is conditioned Brahman. Brahman functioning through something else is conditioned Brahman. So he says, Mimamsyam eva te, you need to think more. He doesn't say that you don't know it or, you know, you are a fool. He says you need to think about it more. So he's encouraging the student to go and think. And why does he do that? Because he wants to make sure the student's knowledge is pakka, what they call sthuna Nikhanan. That means when you shake the pole, when you have dug a pole in the ground, you want to shake it to make sure it is firm. So the teacher wants to know if the student has really understood. Because the student thinks that it is something that illumines adhi daivik, adhi bhautik, adhyatmik. You know those three terms. So it's like when I see a pot out in the sun, what do I need? I first need the sunlight, which is Adi Daivik, which is the Devas. Then I need the pot, which is made of five elements, that is Adi Bhautik. And then I need my own eyes to function, that is Adhyatmik. So that which is illumining all three is Brahman. That's what the student understands. And the teacher says, no, that is not your knowledge. You need to go sit. And Shankaracharya ji, in his commentary, he says, Sa ekante upavishat. In solitude, ekanta means at the end, there is only one. Ekante, in solitude, upavishat, he sat down. So that's true. Whenever we want to really understand something, we sit alone in silence and try to comprehend. If there is a lot of people and noise, you really can't understand if it's a difficult subject. And upavishat, he sat down. What that means is that at that time, he was not doing any other activity. No walking, no talking, no eating, no drinking. He just sat down. So that is second. Sat alone. And the third is samahita. Shankaracharya ji says samahita means well focused. You know, like they say samadhanam, you know, that firm focus. So what do we mean by samahita? So I heard a very beautiful example. Say people are building a temple, right? So there's 15 people, workers working, you know, some are doing the wall and the paint and all that. And then one day the deity arrives, and the deity is very heavy. It's extremely heavy. It's very delicate, you know, made out of fine marble. You don't want it to fall. So they say, all the 15, come on, come on, stop everything else. Come and hold the deity and gently and correctly in the right place, position it. So same way, all his faculties, which were running around outside, his eyes, his ears, his nose, his speech and mind, all that he is collecting in one place. So that is called upavishat ekante samahita. So that is how one should sit. If you really want, after, like listening to this, after that, if we really want to contemplate, that is the way to sit in silence. Now he comes back, and what does he say? He comes with a, you know, very happy, very, very pleased, very, his eyes are shining. So what does he say? So mantra number two, Jayashree, you would like to repeat? Mantra number two. Chapter 2, Mantra 2. Naham manye suvedeti.
Naham manye suvedeti.
No na vedeti vedacha.
No na vedeti vedacha.
Yo nastad veda tad veda.
Yo nastad veda tad veda.
No na vedeti vedacha.
No na vedeti vedacha.
If you can mute, I would like everybody to repeat this. This is a very important mantra where the student, after understanding what is his expression, naham manye suvedeti, no na vedeti vedacha, yo nastad veda tad veda, no na vedeti vedacha. So they say you should not try to memorize it, but try to understand it. Because just memorizing is not enough. You can memorize, but main thing is to understand. Naham, so I don't manye. Manye means I don't think. Suvedeti, I know it very well. I don't think, suved, I don't think I know this very well. Okay.
No, no.
But no na veda, but I also cannot say I do not know. He says, I don't say I know it very well. I don't say I do not know, but I know also. So he says, you say you do not know very well, but then you are saying, you don't say you don't know, and then you are saying you know. So make up your mind, which of the three, because they don't seem to match with each other. And then the next one is even more confusing. Yaha, yaha means whoever that is. So now he's quoting the masters. Naha, among us. Tat Veda no, na Vedeti Vedacha. So one who among us knows, who knows? Tat Veda no, one who does not know, and Vedeti knows, he knows. So he says one who among us who say he does not comprehend and still comprehends, he knows. So somebody may say, you know, what is this guy talking? You thought he sat down and comprehended and sat for many days. I mean, he has come up with nonsense. In fact, some of the Western scholars, when they hear this, they say that the Upanishads are the blabbering of humanity in its infancy. When mankind was still in its infancy, this is just blabbering. It doesn't make sense. Why? Because people just take a Sanskrit to English dictionary, translate it, and think they know it. In fact, Gurudev, at one place, he says, never was mankind that evolved ever in history as at the time of the Upanishads. When the Upanishads were revealed to the masters, they understood them, they memorized them, and then they passed it on to their students, they revealed it. That was the time when human intellect was at the highest, at the supreme, and has never been since then. That is Gurudev. So because he says that these people, and even in India, some people say, yeah, these Upanishads, you know, they are confused. You know, these masters, they don't know what they are talking about. So that's why there is a very famous saying, Swatantrena Brahma Jnana Anveshanam Na Kuryat. By Swatantrena, by yourself, do not try to get understanding of Brahman. You know, people say, I don't need a guru. Why do I need a guru? I can read in the book. You know, people even come say, even in Bal Vihar, one time somebody told Neeru, a student, why do I need to come to Bal Vihar? I can read Ramayana in the internet. So people have this idea that I can study it myself. And they say for the study of the topic like the Upanishads, you must have a guru. Why? Because this knowledge is beyond words. Words cannot express this knowledge. The student is trying his best, what he has understood, to express in words. And it's a very, very beautiful statement that the student has made. It's not confused. Why? Because most of us, when we know something, I say I know it as an object, you know, a pen or a book, or I know it as an object, as name, form, color. Yeah, and it is through the senses and at the level of the mind and the intellect. We just go, but what they say, this knowledge takes us beyond the intellect. So the example they gave is, say, somebody asked me, do you know Rama Rao? You know, I have met Rama Rao a couple of times somewhere. Yeah, I know him. I have met him. You know, he's tall. He's, you know, this, that, whatever his qualities are. And he seems very smart. I know him. Do you know yourself? Do you know Anil? So I cannot say I know Anil. I cannot say I don't know Anil. Because if I say I don't know Anil, that is wrong. And again, to say I know Anil is also wrong, because I cannot know Anil as an object. I have to know Anil as me. So that is more subtle than knowing a person or an object. But subtler than that is knowing the self. Because self-knowledge is million times more subtle than knowing this. And the nature of the self we will study in today's talk. So there is a very beautiful story that Prajapati, you know, the Brahmaji, the creator, was giving a knowledge to the devatas and the asuras. So he said, there is a Vedanta course starting. I want you to send your people. So asuras say, you know, all of us don't need to go. We'll send Virochana, who is our king. He will understand and come back and tell us. So Virochana goes, and then Devta say, yeah, we are all busy, you know, Vayu Devta, Agni Devta, they are busy taking care of the world. So we'll send Indra. So Indra goes. And the Prajapati tells them that what you see with your eyes is that supreme truth. What you see, what you perceive, and you knowing that truth, you will conquer everything else. So they say, yeah, that's very good, because the Asuras wanted to conquer the Devas. Devas wanted to conquer the Asuras. So what you see through your eyes. So they both sit in front of each other. Prajapati tells them, sit. And they are at the edge of a lake. So they look at each other, you know, what does he mean by seeing the other person? Then they look in the lake and Virochana says, I got it. So he says, you know, he sees his body. He says, body is Brahman. That's what Prajapati said. Body is the truth. Knowing that, I will conquer everybody. So he goes back. He's done, you know, with his studies. And he goes and tells the Asuras, you know, our body is the supreme truth. So our purpose in life is to nourish, fatten the body, make it strong. And that's how we will overcome the Devas. So he didn't bother to study more. Indra said, you know, let me, you know, it wasn't that clear. So he stays for 32 years with Prajapati, 32 years. He listens and then he goes back and he says, I had heard that thought that body is, and that's what Virochana says, but body cannot be that supreme because body is changing, body is perishing. Body is jada, it is inert. So he says, I'll go back. So he goes back and tells Prajapati, Bhagwan, I haven't understood. So he says, okay, stay another 32 years. So he stays another 32 years, again studies more and more. Then he thinks, you know, Atma is the subtle and causal body. He comes to that from grass. He says, it's subtle and causal. So again he goes. When he goes, again he thinks, cannot be subtle and causal. That is changing, that is, you know, inert, and that is known. So he comes back. He says, no, that is not enough. So Prajapati says, okay, stay another 32 years, contemplate. Now you have heard enough for 64 years. Sit and contemplate. So for 32 more years, Indra sits and contemplates on this, what he has heard from Prajapati. Then he, after 32 years, it's 96 years, he says, I think I'm getting it, but it's not fully clear. Prajapati says, okay, stay longer. So he stays another 5 years. So after 101 years of listening and contemplating, he gets the truth. So we say, how about us? We don't have 101 years, you know, But the thing is that if we are sitting here studying Upanishads, we must have done some study in our past life. Plus, they say that in human birth, it is possible to attain the truth if you have right guru and you have the right scripture and you have Shraddha. So we have Puja Gurudev, we are blessed and we have this opportunity to study this. So we can get it. We don't have to wait 101 years. Or even if you don't get it in this lifetime, you can continue. But the best is now, here itself. Now, there is another famous saying in the Upanishads. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. So that from where speech returns and mind also returns. So it cannot be spoken. It cannot be understood by the mind. So what should we do? So they say you should concentrate your mind and think of that and that alone. For example, they give it, there is a black paper and you want to burn it. What do? You take a lens, convex lens, and the sunlight which is diffused, you focus it on one spot and then that black paper burns. So similarly, this knowledge, one has to concentratedly focus on it, not scattered like the sun. You know, the sun is scattered, but when the lens is there, it focuses. So they say there are three things you need to have. Shruti, Yukti, Anubhuti. So three things you need to have. So Shruti means listening. So we have heard and we have Puja Gurudev's commentary. So reading that commentary is also Shruti. So having heard, having obtained this knowledge from the scriptures as interpreted by a realized master, Puja Gurudev, that is Shravan, that is Shruti. Then what do I do? Yukti. Then I sit and systematically analyze this knowledge, as Indra had done. You know, it cannot be the body, it cannot be the mind, it cannot be the intellect, it cannot be the vasanas, it cannot be. And also, as we discussed in Sunday's meditation class, you know, balya dishu jagrada dishu tatha sarvasu avasthasu api. So think and contemplate, as Shankaracharya ji says in Dakshinamurti Stotram, what is it that is constant from childhood, youth, middle age, old age, remains unchanged and is aware of all. See, like I remember my childhood, I remember my younghood, middle age, old age. All I remember, it's not the ego, because the ego is changing. What is it that knows all four stages of life? Not only that, but also knows my waking, dream, and deep sleep. Waking, it knows. Dream, I remember. And even deep sleep, it knows, because I wake up in the morning and say, Praga swapsam iti prabodha samaye ya pratya bhignayate Dakshinamurti Stotram. Shankaracharya ji says, even in the morning, I remember I have slept well or I did not sleep well. So that which knows waking, dream, deep sleep, youth, that I am. That is what, that is Dakshinamurti Bhagwan, that is Lord Shiva within, that is the knower of all these states. And what one has to do, if people say, after getting this knowledge, I'll get it, then I'll enjoy life. Maybe for I'll sacrifice for little life. But as long as you have a desire for enjoyment, as long as the vasana is still there, you will not realize. So you have to go to a state of desirelessness, where I want nothing, 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 except this knowledge. So all other desires have to be given up. And then only this knowledge can be obtained. And there is a very beautiful shloka in Bhagavad Gita when we do Sthita Prajna next week. That is the first shloka that Bhagavan talks about the man of wisdom. He says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atman yev atmana tushtah sthita prajnasya tadochate. Who is the Sthita Prajna man of wisdom? Who has given up all desires and is content in the self, by the self. So I have to be content within, and only I'll be contented when I have this knowledge of the self. Now, this is a very other, very beautiful kind of example. I would like everybody to pay attention. See, what happens is that a student is given math problems, and see how the masters, with simple examples, they come up with the highest truth. So student is given math problems, right, in the book. And at the end of the book, there are answers. So A plus B and all that, you know, square, this, that, all that is given, complicated. At the end of the book, there is answer. So student can say, okay, I have the question. He will go to page 99, write the answer and submit it. And he may do his homework, but in the exam, he's not going to pass because he has not done the method. How did you come to that answer? See, that is very important. Otherwise, answers you can get in the book. Same way, people, I also had this difficulty. I used to think, teacher has told you are Brahman, Tattvamasi. I believe it. I understand it. That's it. Ho gaya. That is like somebody has given you the answer. You are directly going to the answer without going through the process. So what is the process? Process is what they say, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. We say, oh, I've heard it. I know it. But one has to systematically, sincerely first listen, understand with full attention, then independently contemplate. That is very important. Sit and study, and then sit and meditate on it. Meditate on not only in the morning, but all the time abide, abide, abide in that knowledge as to what is the nature of Brahman. And people say, you know, Brahman, I was sitting for meditation and Brahman came, appeared and told me, what would you like, son? And I said, I don't want anything. I just want world peace. May people who come to me benefit. And Brahman said, Tathastu, and left. So that is not Brahman. As they say, whatever you see, even in your meditation, is not Brahman. And this cannot be decided by the majority. The majority of the people decide it cannot be. So you cannot say, I know it. You cannot say, I know it very well. If you say, I know it very well, then you are knowing it as an object. If you say, I do not know, that also is false, because you know, because you are Brahman. You are with Brahman all the time. And again, you cannot say that I know, because if I know, anything you know becomes an object. So you have to go to the understanding, I am. That's what he says, one amongst us. He's talking about the masters who comprehend it as the not known, and as the known, he comprehends it. So it is not known, and it is also known. So what it means is, it is not known as an object. It is known as me, the subject. So this is the essence of this first mantra. Again, this was quite confusing. You know, the students spoke, but there were other students in the class and they were lost. He said, I don't know, but I know, and I also know, and I do not not know, and those who know it, know it. And the teacher understood. Teacher was very happy that the student has got it. Student does namaskar and leaves, but other students look completely lost. And the teacher is very happy. He's silent that other student is gone, but the remaining students are shaken, confused. So at that time, Shruti Mata, Shruti mother comes with the next shloka. It's like when, you know, like in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan shows his Virat Roop and Arjuna is silent. He's completely spellbound. He doesn't know what to say. And the Bhagavad Gita has to go on, right? It suddenly stops. So Sanjay steps in and he says, let me tell Dhritarashtra what he sees of the Virat Roop. Or in a play, you know, the actors are silent, then the narrator comes and talks about the next chapter or next episode of the play. So here the Shruti Mata now gives us the next mantra, which kind of supports this knowledge, and it. So, Sharad, you have a shloka number three, mantra number three.
Yes.
Yasya matam tasya matam.
Yasya matam tasya matam.
Matam yasya na vedasaha.
Matam yasya na vedasaha.
Avijñātam vijānatām.
Avijñātam vijānatām.
Vijñātam avijānatām.
Vijñātam avijānatām.
Can mute and all just repeat together. Yasya matam tasya matam. Matam yasya na vedasaha. Avijñātam vijānatām. Vijñātam avijānatām. So, yasya amatam. So, one who, again, I don't think it makes it any easier. Yasya amatam. So, by whom it is not understood, tasya matam. He has understood. But one who has not understood, he has understood or comprehended. And one who has matam, who says, I have comprehended, yasya na vedasaha, he does not know. So one who says, I have comprehended, he does not know. One who says, I have not comprehended, he knows. And then he says further, supports that, vijanatam, the wise people, to them it is avijnatam, it cannot be known. But avijanatam, to the ignorant it is known. So to the ignorant it is known, to the wise it is not known. So the students, of course, are kind of confused as we are. So Gurudev in his commentary says it very beautifully, that to get this knowledge, this Upanishadic knowledge, or any even Bhagavad Gita, but especially Upanishads, you need two things. You need a sharp intellect and you need a pure mind. And pure mind that is full of love, compassion, you know, kindness, unselfishness, and is free of anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, you know, all those. And the intellect, which is very sharp, sharpened by the clear understanding of the scriptures. And when the two are combined, sharp intellect and a pure mind, then you get a third quality called intuition, which is, so we have to develop this. So we cannot say, oh, I have understood, I heard it intellectually. I have to make the intellect sharp and make the mind pure. And then what comes is intuition, and which is called as jnana chakshu, you know, this third eye, the third eye of wisdom. You know, the, they say Lord Shiva's third eye is there. So what it means is that this jnana chakshu, this eye of wisdom, is the eye of intuition. And one thing we have to understand very clearly, yad drishyam tat alpam tat jadam tat martyam tat dukhatmakam tat heyam. Drishyam, drishya means whatever is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, thought, no contemplated sense. Is limited, alpam. And whatever I know is jadam, it is inert. Only even this body, mind, intellect are inert. They're only innervated by the presence of consciousness. So it is inert. And it is martyam. What is inert is perishing. So body will perish, mind and intellect, you know, again, will keep on changing. So changing is perishing. And whatever is perishing is dukhatmakam, will give sorrow. Like when my body is perishing, it will give me sorrow, is going down. My mind is getting confused. So it is heyam. So whatever you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, comprehend, feel, should all be given up. So that is first. Then Gurudev in his commentary has a very long story. I won't go into it. I would recommend everybody to read the commentary of the third mantra called Kill the Ego. And it says the ego has to be killed by pure knowledge. The story is long, so don't try to read it now, but read it later on. And Gurudev says that all sadhanas should lead to killing of the ego. So when I'm doing karma yoga, I am not the doer, Bhagwan is working through me. In bhakti yoga, Bhagwan alone is, you know, the creator of this whole universe. Everything is Bhagwan alone. In jnana yoga, there is one Brahman, one substratum. All the world is an illusion. And in hatha yoga, in meditation, I should combine those three and contemplate. And in all of them, the ego has to go away. As long as the ego is there, I will not attain this truth. That's why, you know, Kabir Das Ji says, Prem gali ati sankri, Hari hai to main nahi, main hu to Hari nahi. He says the path of love for God is very, very narrow. If Hari, if God is there, I am not there. If I am there, God is not there. Two of us cannot be together. So this I, this ego has to be annihilated through right knowledge that God alone is everything. God is working. Whatever I am doing is because of His grace and total surrender. That is love. Love is total surrender and total identification that God, that Krishna and I are not separate, Shiva and I are not separate, Brahman alone is everything, and that is me. And so Gurudev says, Dvaitam cannot reach that truth. Dvaitam and even Vishisht Advaitam, according to Gurudev in his commentary, he says, because Dvaitam thinks God is somebody separate from me, and God and I can never be one, and I always want to enjoy the presence of God. He says, yeah, that is good, nothing wrong with that, but the distance is still there, that I and God are separate. And in Vishishta Advaitam, we say, I am a part of God. You know, that's what Hanumanji says, at the body level, I am your servant. At the mind, intellect, I am a part. So you cannot say part, because then you are saying God is divided. Brahman is part, different parts. Each one of us is a part of Brahman. So Brahman is divided into 7 billion parts plus 33 crore devatas, you know, 330 million. It cannot be. So Brahman cannot be divided. So I cannot be a part of Brahman. I cannot be separate from Brahman. I am Brahman. That we have to reach. And Gurudev, in his commentary, I would recommend everybody to read. This is the most powerful example which we can apply in meditation. Beautiful example. So Gurudev gives the example of a mirror. I think if any of you have read this third chapter commentary. So Gurudev says that suppose there is a very powerful, very strong arc light, you know, very, very strong. And you place it in front of a mirror and say the light is 12 inches from the mirror. Then the reflection in the mirror will be 12 inches back, right? That is the appearance you will get, that the light is far, so the reflection is also far. Then you bring the light closer, 3 inches. Then the reflection also comes 3 inches. There is a mirror surface in the middle which is reflecting. That's clear, right? Then he says, bring the mirror, bring that light completely touching the mirror. And what will happen? The reflection also will come and touch, right? The light, the reflection will touch the light. And then if you leave it there, then the heat of the light will burn that mercury in the mirror. You know, that the coating of the mirror will burn the shiny, and then there won't be any mirror left. Then that light and the reflection will merge as one, right? The light and won't be any more different from the mirror. Same way in your meditation, they say that what we should do is the light of consciousness is reflected in my intellect, you know, what they call chidabhas, reflected in the intellect, and that creates the ego, right? How is the ego created? The light of consciousness reflected in my mind and intellect creates this ego, this I, and that is how I am functioning. And so that is still separate. Ego is separate from the light of consciousness, because the intellect, the mind and intellect becomes an obstacle. It is in the way and it is obstructing. So the mind and intellect, how do you go beyond that? They say, keep bringing it closer and closer. So keep your intellect as close to the consciousness as you can. So through in meditation, slowly, slowly, slowly take your mind and intellect and bring it closer to the self. We have talked in the sixth chapter, Atma Samtham Mana Kritva Na Kinchid Api Chintaye. That's a very powerful mantra of the sixth chapter, where it says, center your mind in the self, the Atma, and think of nothing else. So when the intellect constantly comes in touch with the self, with the Lord, or you can, in a path of bhakti, you can say connected with Sri Krishna or Lord Shiva, or when you connect, slowly that intellect will disappear. Disappear means the intellect will not have its own independent thinking. It will become one with Brahman, and then the ego will disappear. Some beautiful example how, you know, these masters come up with such ideas from simple examples. We all have seen mirror thousands of times, but to use that for contemplation, it's a very, very beautiful example. So that's what they say. To reach God, you have to have no I-ness or minus. I am not there and nothing is mine. Everything is His. Tera tujhko arpan kya lage mera. We always say that in the aarti. So we should start living that. And it is very important to leave the body consciousness that I am this body. That is the most difficult and that has to be given up. That I am not this body. You know, mano buddha hankar chitta ninaham. You know, Shankaracharya ji says in Nirvan Shatkam, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the ego. Chidananda rupaha shivoham. I am Shiva, that is of the nature of Chit and Anand. And Bhagwan in the 12th chapter, he says, avyaktahi gatir dukham deha vadbhira vapyate. One who thinks I am this body can never get the God that is formless. If I have form, then God also has form. So if you can worship God with form, but then you have the idea I am with form. If I am formless, then Sri Krishna is also formless. Mother Saraswati is also formless. Because the moment you become formless, you become unlimited. Form is always limited. Formless is unlimited. So thinking myself to be formless is very, very important. Very, very important point. And then also they say that Vedanta, there should not be mere listening. One should live this life of Vedanta. That means whatever I have studied in Bhagavad Gita, do some service, karma yoga, do bhakti, prayer every day, do some studying every day, do meditating every day, and do not limit this to the books. I should become that. I should become. So if I say aham brahmasmi, if I am Brahman, then I should act like Brahman. If I say Krishna and I are one, then all the qualities of Krishna should come in me. All the qualities of Lord Shiva should come in me. So mere listening to Vedanta is not enough. I have to start living it. So now this is another interesting point. You say the person who has never studied Vedanta, right? He has never gone to a teacher and somebody tells him there is Brahman, you should know. He says, I have no idea what is Brahman, right? I don't know Brahman, he will say. So does that mean he's realized? You know, they say one who says I do not know knows. Remember again and again. So there are three kinds of people. One who has never studied, never gone to the teacher and says, I don't know Brahman. Okay, that is one. Second one has studied Upanishads and says, I don't know Brahman. And third says, I know Brahman. Now, which one of them knows? The one who has never studied or one who has studied and says, I don't know? Or one who has studied and says, I know? I think by now everybody should know. It is the second one. Right? Because the first one who has never gone, he's out. The third one who says, I know Brahman, again, that is an erroneous notion. You cannot know Brahman standing in front of you as an object. So the wise person says, I don't know Brahman, but I don't know Brahman as an object. I know as myself. That's why he says, the Vijanatam, one who knows, says, I do not know. And one who does not know says, I know. Is that clear by now? I've said it enough times in last week and this week. So they say that even when you are ignorant, you are Brahman. Avidya kale api Brahman. Even at the time of ignorance, you are Brahman. At the time of knowledge, you are also Brahman. The difference is that the ignorant person does not know. And the wise person knows.
The story of tenth man.
Yeah, the tenth man story is also there. If you have not read, maybe Google it or you can look it up and read the story of the tenth man. If I have time, maybe I can cover at the end. But basically, the wise and the ignorant both are Atma, the self. One knows and one does not know. So they say we have a lot of vrittis, a lot of thoughts in our mind, but all the thoughts have to be replaced by Brahmakara vritti. Everything is Brahman. I am Brahman, you are Brahman, this pot is Brahman, this room is Brahman, computer. Everything is Brahman, and Brahman is formless, but whatever you see is name and form, appearance upon Brahman, and that one has to understand. And the knowledge of Brahman should not become like a feather in the cap. I know physics, I know chemistry, I know biology, I also know Brahman. No, I cannot know Brahman. I am Brahman, and Brahman, as Brahman, I am the knower of everything. If I am Brahman, then I know this body, I know this mind, I know this intellect. So they say, be a sakshi, be a witness, and watch. You know, Guruji says, Rama jharoke baitkar jagka mujra dekh. Sit in the abode of Sri Rama, sit with him, and see the world as a mujra, as a dance, as a play. So do not take things in the world too seriously. Be a witness, as I am the witness of this body, this mind, this intellect, and I am the witness of all. And for that, one has to give priority to this knowledge, that this knowledge has to become my number one priority. Nothing else should matter. So that is where, and the next mantra, again, you keep saying is very important. Shankaracharya ji says that the mantra number 4 in chapter 2 is Upalabdhi Dwaram. It is gateway to realization. So how many people here want to realize? I do. So they say the fourth mantra, Shankaracharya ji says, I'm not saying it, even Gurudev is not saying. Shankaracharya ji says the fourth mantra is Upalabdhi Dwaram. It is the doorway to realization. So we'll cover that next week. After the question, if we have time, I can tell the story of the 10th man. Go ahead, Kerry, you can unmute.
I was just wondering, is there anything that is unknown or that is not knowable?
No, that besides, is the word that
besides
is,
Brahman,
no, everything else is known, even the remotest star. You know, there will be some organism, some bacteria. Even you say in heaven, there are the gods who know it. Even in hell, there are the demons who know it. So there is nothing in this universe that.
So
is,
it's satya and mithya.
Yeah, the satya and mithya, right? So everything is knowable except Brahman. Brahman cannot be known. Everything else is an object. Yes.
My bird wants to be enlightened.
Next week, we'll all be enlightened. Mantra number 4. That's what Shankaracharya ji says. So. Let's see. Any other questions? Any comments?
Anil, just one question. What is the relationship between the the condition consciousness plus ego and ego?
Yeah, no, condition
reflected consciousness and ego.
Yeah. So the reflected consciousness creates the ego.
Okay. So
when consciousness reflects in the mind and intellect, then
creates the ego. Okay.
So manifests how I function. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just as the light, when it reflects in the mirror, it creates the light in the back. So ego is the result of the
result of the
chitamas. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, Lata.
You mentioned in the first verses that what you know, the teacher says to the student that what you know is the conditioned Brahman.
Right.
Is that, what would be the other name for it? Ishvara, or as an individual, will I be called the Jiva?
No, so the best example is electricity. You know, electricity we know because it functions right. through the bulb as light, through the heater.
Right.
But that powerhouse, the central powerhouse is not known, and yeah. that does not reflect. That does not create anything. It is the electricity through the wire.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we are seeing, whatever we know is reflected consciousness functioning through the BMI, through the mind and intellect, illumining the body and illumining the world. So what was your question?
So conditioned Brahman.
Yeah, conditioned consciousness, it is the light of the unconditioned consciousness functioning through the mind and intellect, reflecting and then manifesting as this entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
The universe is created by that conditioned consciousness functioning through the total mind.
Right.
See, the
functioning through total mind, meaning Ishvara, basically, if you can name that way. That it's not specifically named that way in the chapter, but that's what you would refer to.
Ishvara, you can say, is the consciousness, right?
And leading up to the next verse, give us the definition of moksha. What are we trying to attain? And you know, you had said that before. So it's the wise people who have attained moksha already, but functioning in the world.
Yes.
Right? As a liberated soul.
Yeah. So one of the things is desirelessness, as we said. This individual has no longer any desires, anything. He is completely fulfilled. That's number one. He does not need, he or she does not need anything for themselves, because once they have that state, then that is the complete state of enlightenment. And then they do not give any importance to the world. They think this world is a natak, is a play, and they will play their part. And out of compassion, they will share this knowledge, but not all of them. Some of them do not. Some of them just merge into their truth, and then they don't come out of that. Or they just stay in one place. And they say, if anybody wants to study, may come. And maybe few people like Tapovan Maharaj or Raman Maharishi, they didn't travel around, give talks and all. They were just completely content. If somebody comes, theek hai, nahi aaye, toh they are. So the desirelessness and atman ye vaat, prajahati yada kaman, I just mentioned, who gives up all desires and is content in the self, by the self. He's not looking for anything else to make him complete.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of incompleteness is bondage. And also in the Yog Vashishta, it says that when the vasanas become very thin, very, very almost non-existent, that is liberation.
The state of liberation.
And the thickening of vasanas is bondage. Thinning of vasanas is moksha, is liberation.
Mm-hmm.
So desirelessness, without vasanas, content, complete. And, you know, and he sees oneness. That's why, they say that Jesus said, "Na, treat thy neighbor as thyself." So all these are qualities of wise person. And then also he says that whatever is happening, only my Father in heaven has willed it. If he had not, even when they were crucifying him, he said, "You would not have been able to crucify me if my Father in heaven did not will it." So even at any time, he sees God's will. And these great Mahatmas, they constantly live in that. They live in that awareness of God alone is functioning. So,
thank you.
Anything else? If not, we have 6 minutes. I can tell the story of the 10th man. Some of you have heard, maybe some of you have not heard. So it's okay if I tell the story? Yeah, so there was this guru who had 10 disciples, and they were not very very smart. They had just started studying. And they were supposed to go to across the river. The river was very shallow. They could walk across, and they were supposed to walk across the river and go to the other side where there was some satsang going on. And the guru says, you know, go there. There is a Mahatma who has come. So go there and learn from him and walk back. But he said, make sure 10 of you stay together. Don't get lost, you know, crossing the river, even though it's shallow. I don't want anybody to get. So they say, oh, no problem, Guru will go. So they all go, cross the river, get to the other side, and they start counting. They say, let us see, you know, how many of us are there. So first one says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, there's only 9. You know, he doesn't count himself. And the second one says, you don't know how to count. I will count. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And they all start crying. They sit down and start crying. You know, Guru had said, take care. And now we have lost the 10th man. Where is the 10th man? Each one is not counting himself, counting the other 9. And they are sitting and crying on the banks, and they are not going anywhere. And then a wise man comes and says, why are you all crying? What's wrong? They said, you know what, sir, we left 10 people left the guru, but by the time we came here, I think one of them got drowned in the river or got pulled in the current, because there's only 9. He said, how? He says, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So the wise person says, oh, these guys are quite foolish. So then he makes them sit down in a line, and then he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And 10th, you are the 10th man. See, he tells them, each one of you is the 10th man, but not knowing you are the 10th man, you are only counting 9. I know it sounds like a simple story, but has a very profound truth, where we don't pay attention to ourselves and see the whole world. So I am part of the world, and I am that. See, I am that missing 10th man. So I am that Brahman that was missing. Because we say, I have not seen Brahman, I have not heard Brahman, because we are looking for Brahman outside. Or we are looking for God outside, or we are looking for happiness outside. So when they say you are the 10th man, means you are that Brahman, and you are the source of happiness, you are the source of contentment. So I am the 10th man. This actually appears in one of the Upanishads. So it's a very profound story that tells that do not look for things outside. Do not look for happiness outside. You are happiness. You are Brahman. You are that divinity, and everything is within you. So that is the story of the 10th man. Any other question? Auntie, is thoda clear hua ke nahi? Is it little clear or not still hard?
It is little clear, but still I think I have to study little more.
Oh, we'll keep repeating this next week. We'll repeat the same idea. And then there is a very long story, beautiful story in this Upanishad, in the 3rd chapter. So there is a story which further explains this Upanishad. So there is, next week we will finish 2nd chapter. And then after that, the 3rd chapter is a story. And then the 4th chapter is commentary on the story. So the same idea that whatever I know is not Brahman, because I am. And Brahman is the knower. I am the knower. That is, I am that. So continuously staying in that. And whatever I know is not the ultimate truth. That one has to be very clear. That whatever I see, hear, smell, taste, touch is not God. God is within as the knower. And when I know this body, mind, intellect as a witness, I am closer to the truth. So always look at the world as a witness, as a sakshi. Be a witness of the body, witness of the mind, witness of the intellect, and witness of the whole world. So as a sakshi, you come close to the truth.
Lots of difference between theory and practical.
Yeah. So I repeated listening, and then keep reminding yourself that I am the sakshi. I am not Mohini. I am the knower of Mohini. I know Mohini. I am not Mohini. You know what I'm saying? Mohini is my name. It is the body that is where I am occupying. Yeah. But I am not this body. I am not even this name. His name is given to the body. It's not, you know, it's not me. So rejecting everything of the world, including my name, my body, my mind, everything is not me. And pay attention to that, which is the knower of that. So constantly tell yourself, I am not that. Shaku, you have question?
Yeah, it means the universe has no real existence. It's just a conscious, apart from consciousness.
Right. Existence cannot be apart from consciousness. Yes. Existence and consciousness are one. Existence is consciousness. Consciousness is existence. If consciousness was separate from existence, then it would become non-existent. If existence was separate from consciousness, it would become inert. That's why they say, na, Sat, Chit, Anand. So existence, consciousness, and infinite. Anand here means infinite. So Brahman is, so don't just mechanically say, I am Sat, Chit, Anand, Brahma. How do I come to that conclusion? Yes, I can start by saying, I am that. But then how do I come? Through stepwise, through study of the Upanishads.
Thank you.
Otherwise, we say, oh, teacher told, I also used to think, teacher told you are Brahman. I believe it. No, that's not enough. Then you are going directly to the last page and getting the answer. I have to study it for myself systematically. Again and again, read the Upanishads. And we are going to do 3, 4, 5 Upanishads in the next few years. So the same ideas will be repeated. So it is helpful to me also. So we can end here. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.